And hello again, aliens, ghosts, and robots. Welcome back. This is Keith, and I hope you're doing great today. One of the things that's really cool about podcasting is that you get listeners from all over the world. I was just looking over the stats for Invisible Sun. We've got the usual suspects of the United States, but we also have our great friends in United Kingdom and Canada. But we've also got friends in Sweden, in Australia, in Germany, in Ireland, and Brazil. And I had a fan drop into the Discord server from Luxembourg. Wherever you are in the world, I'm really happy that you're listening. And would you do me a favor? Could you talk to the people where you are and encourage them to listen too? I'd love to have listeners from every part of the world. All right, here's today's episode. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 13. The dingy train swayed along its magnetized path through the tunnels of Mars. I was alone in the car, buckled into a worn plastic seat. The train smelled of oil and dust and recycled air. It was only three cars long. On Earth, every train is packed. There were a few people in the car ahead of me that I could make out through the front windows, but no one else. At least, no one was following me. Probably. My tablet rested on my lap, and I followed my progress on the map. I purchased a ticket for Eos Mensa, the next major township down this line, though I planned on getting off earlier. Hopefully this would fool the sheriff, if only for a little while. Pale light streamed through the windows as the train emerged from underground and careened along the surface. To my left stretched an endless, featureless desert of orange sand. On my right, the train paralleled the edge of the vast Valle Marineris, shrouded in thin, fast-moving clouds that blew around the worn monuments of rock. The sun was a small ball in the sky, more tan than yellow. I truly felt what the word alien means. Back in the underground world of the township, the strange was tempered by the familiar. Being on Mars was an abstract concept there, where there are diners and hotels and taxis. But looking out at this primal and ancient landscape makes me feel in my guts how far from home I am. Were it not for the pressurized cabin of the train, I would be dead. Death here is easy. A pinprick in a pressure suit, faulty radiation shielding, a fire. Mars is not a home of opportunity. It is a home of necessity. How desperate must humankind be to flee the Earth, used up as it is, to come to this place that cares nothing for them? The train swooped back down into darkness, underground. Brakes whined, and the train began to slow. We're approaching St. Michael's, and I tucked my tablet into my jacket pocket. The train floated up to a series of airlocks in the side of the tunnel, each positioned to precisely match the doors of the cars. It lurched and stopped. Airlocks engaged with a hiss, and doors opened. My stop. The boarding platform fed into a wide underground room carved from the rock, more rough-hewn than the spaces back at Candor Chasma. No one manned the train station. There's just an automated ticketing machine. Near the train airlocks was a ramp going up a tunnel, blocked by a chain-link fence. A sign attached read, "Stratoline Algae Farm. Closed. Private property. Do not enter." There was also evidence of a mining operation. Some handheld drilling equipment and safety gear caged up and locked next to a large freight elevator. Past that, at the far end of the cave, was another tunnel. This one, decorated with an archway supported by a pair of native stone columns, each etched with the symbol of a Christian cross over crossed spears. St. Michael's Cathedral, I presume. Behind me, the doors clanked shut. The train pulled away, though there's almost no sound, only vibration I could feel through the rock. All was quiet. It was a little chilly, and I put my hands in my pockets, looking around for signs of anyone else. But the place felt empty, or rather, abandoned, closed down. I went through the elegant columns into the cathedral. Motion sensors detect my presence, and soft, colored light replaces the stark illumination near the train platform. I expected large wooden doors, some sort of narthex, something church-like anyway, but St. Michael's is not a church in that traditional sense. The cathedral is a man-made cavern, the ceiling 20 meters high, the walls slanting inward like a pyramid. Stained glass windows set into the walls glow with depictions of martyrs and their deaths, artificially lit from behind. We're still underground here. The largest window looms over the altar, showing the beatific face of St. Michael, angelic wings spread, spear raised, scales dangling in an afterthought in his other hand. It doesn't feel like there have been services in here for quite a while. There are metal pews with prayer book screens mounted in them, but they were not even on standby power. Orange and pink dust covers the flagstone floor, and though I could see footprints along the nave toward the altar, I couldn't really tell how old they were. I wondered if a priest still works here, or if anyone comes to pray or think, but I doubt it. The sheriff had mentioned a dig team. Maybe those footprints were theirs. I knew I shouldn't linger, even if it felt like I was alone. Evan said he had hidden the key under the cathedral, so I tried to find my way down. Small archways flanked the altar, one of them dimly lit. The footprints in the dust lead from the nave through that archway, so it seemed a logical place to start. I didn't even bring a flashlight. My tablet has a small light, but really, I was ill-equipped. A fool on a fool's errand. Well, no. Evan did not think this was a foolish task. I started down the steps. Someone hit me on the back of the head, a cracking blow that sent pain spreading across my skull. I stumbled forward, falling in slow motion in the low gravity. I reached up to fend off my attacker when a blow to my kidneys blasted agony through my lower body. I fell to my knees, helplessly. A big hand grabbed the back of my neck, vice-like. The cathedral vanished into muffled darkness as my assailant pulled a drawstring bag over my head. I tried to stand, to struggle free, but he wrenched my hands behind my back, snapping handcuffs around them. My head was swimming, pitiful pulses of light dancing in front of my eyes as I was hauled up and dragged down the steps. God, I didn't even have time to react.
Wait, stop.
I pulled against his grip, trying to kick free, to get away. He jabbed his knuckles hard into a spot on my back, and the strike steals the breath from my lungs. It was all I could manage to simply stay upright, though I suspected he could haul me along without my assistance.
Don't struggle.
I was in no position to argue, coughing helplessly against the fabric, tears streaming from my eyes, my legs rubbery and weak. He pushed me along in silence, down the steps and into what I suspected were more tunnels. Before long, I had lost all sense of direction. All I could hear was the echo of our footsteps. Eventually, we stopped. A metal door grates open. He shoved me forward and I stumbled, banging my knee against something. A chair, I think? Hands clapped on my shoulders, forcing me to sit. He searched my pockets, took my tablet. I was glad I had deleted Evan's message, though now I feared I had failed him. A woman's soft voice comes from another part of the room.
Easy now. Did anyone follow him?
Behind me, somewhere, the metal door closes and locks. Then comes another voice, in another part of the room.
No, all's quiet.
The hood was pulled from my head. Looming over me was the broad, tattooed man, the invisible sun marked clearly on his throat. Behind him sat Sister Lucy, on a cot, her legs crossed, her expression stern. I was in a tiny, dimly lit room, which smells of dust and sweat. The red-haired man, the same that I saw in the expatriation line, was in the far corner, in front of an array of little screens. He was plugging my tablet into a computer. I looked back to Sister Lucy, who still watched me intently, strands of her graying hair pulled free from her ponytail and hanging across her face.
Who are you? There must be some sort of mistake. I was just sightseeing.
I wished I sounded more confident.
I didn't ask what you were doing. I asked who you are.
Should I tell her? Would it make a difference if she knew?
My name is Christopher Cousins.
I was still wheezing a bit from the beating I'd taken. A little spit clung to my lower lip. My wrists chafed in the handcuffs. Sister Lucy glanced over her shoulder to the redhead. He nodded.
Matches the info on his tablet. Now, we turn to the question you answered first. Perhaps it was right for you to do so, for who we are is not nearly as important as what we do. What are you doing here, Christopher? I told you. I was sightseeing.
The tattooed man shook his head and moved to stand next to Lucy.
I saw you at the gateport. You're following us.
No, I just heard about this cathedral and wanted to see it. That's all, I promise.
Sister Lucy narrowed her brown eyes at me. Under her hard focus, she looked tired, her crow's feet deep.
Promises should never be made hastily, Christopher.
The tattooed man stared at me with dangerous intensity. How easily he subdued me. How skillfully he caused me pain. He could have killed me. He still could. What were their intentions? Was Evan working with them or against them?
Please, I don't...
Found something?
The redhead tapped a few spots on his screen.
Video recording that was deleted. I've restored it.
They all turn to look. One of the little screens lights up with Evan's face.
Christopher, I hope it's you that found this. I knew you'd pick up on the clues. Oh my God, I'm so sorry to do this to you. But I don't know what else I can do.
The blood drained from my face. Now they would know the truth. Sister Lucy rose and moved to me. She is a small woman, but she is hard and strong, intimidating despite her size. After another moment or two of watching, she asks,
"Who is that man?"
I said nothing. I didn't want to make things worse. Lucy crouched down in front of me, to my eye level. Her voice was quiet, almost gentle.
Christopher, it is important that you tell us how you know this man.
Once the message finished, they'd know everything I knew. They would have the location of the key, and then it, soon enough. And there wasn't anything I could do about that now.
He's an old friend. He invited me to visit him, only when I got here he was gone. And instead he left me this message.
She nodded to me, encouraging.
And his name? Evan. Evan Greek.
The tattooed man and Sister Lucy exchanged significant looks. The redhead was watching the video, rapt.
There. I know you're feeling a bit like Cornelis de Houtman on some disastrous voyage to the East Indies, where everything goes wrong. But I can't just open my big mouth and tell you where it is.
Oh, for Christ's sake. Sorry, Sister.
I'm sorry,
but I thought we had it.
Sister Lucy looked at me, her expression intense.
Tell me everything. There's not much to tell. I got that message not an hour ago and came here to find the key. I was gonna do what he asked.
Where were you going to look?
I don't know. I don't really have a plan. Look, I'm not really cut out for this sort of thing. Just, Evan asked me to go. I thought maybe I could puzzle it out as I went.
You must have known something.
She's watching me with unnerving focus.
If you do, you must tell us.
No, nothing. Only what's on the message.
Why did he call you?
I don't know. I guess I was the only person he could trust. He sounded desperate, and... Look, what has happened to Evan? What's going on? And what is it you're after?
She stared at me many long moments more, her dark eyes tracing the lines of my face, gauging, I suppose, my sincerity. The other two remained silent for those few moments, as if they were waiting, expectantly, for some decision. Finally, she looked away from me with a small sigh and stood. She indicated me to the tattooed man with a little tilt of her head. The man hesitated.
Are you sure?
She nodded soberly. My mouth went dry. He walked behind me. I could feel his presence looming over me. Sister Lucy looked away, joining the redhead in watching the last part of Evan's message.
After you've heard it. I'm sorry, Christopher. I truly am. But I don't know what else to do.
His powerful hand gripped my shoulder, keeping me still. He grabbed my wrists. And then there was a click. The handcuffs came loose. My arms were free. The tattooed man moved in front of me, his manner still very calm, much like I remembered him at the protest back on Earth. I wiped at the spittle on my lips. There was a little blood mixed in.
Okay, Christopher. Evan wanted you to get the key and deliver it to Earth. Only you don't have to do that anymore. We'll do it instead. In a moment, I'll take you back to the cathedral, and you can catch the next train out. I suggest you go home. Pretend none of this ever happened. There's a good chance that if you do, you'll be left alone.
Wait, what? You're going to do it?
We are. Evan Grieg has been working with us, and others, here on Mars and back on Earth. At least, before they ran into trouble. We came here to try to help. But when we got here, he was already gone. They took him, like they took the others, here on Mars. They took him, and... I'm sorry. But he is dead.
I supposed I always knew that was a possibility. But I also had hope. Bitter, painful hope. My friend was dead. All this effort spent for... what? Another punchline to another cosmic joke.
How do you know?
She looked down at the ground, hands in her lap.
We have access to some police records. Morgue files, for instance. They made it look like a heart attack.
I rubbed my thumbs over my temples. They murdered him.
They? Who were they?
The redhead snarled slightly, his eyes still on the small array of screens.
Shayot.
I swallowed the rising lump in my throat.
But why? Why would a company like Shayot do something like this? What is it they want? What have you found? What did you do to him?
Christopher, honestly, Evan was right. The less you know, the better. It is safer for you.
I dragged myself to my feet, fingers curling into fists.
Safer? Is it safer than being clubbed on the back of the head and dragged through the tunnels to be interrogated? How do I know you didn't do it? How do I know I can trust what you say?
She sounds so very tired.
Because if we were working against Evan, you would be dead now. A plausible accident would be staged to cover your death. The local authorities would sign off on it. And soon, all that you ever were would be gone. Lost. That is the end they would choose for you. It is an end they have forced on too many good people already. But that is not what we do when we can help it. We prefer to allow people to choose their own endings. Give us a few minutes and we'll get you back to the train, and you can be off.
She turned back to the redhead, who was passing Evan's recording through a series of filters.
No hidden data or encrypted code I can find. At least we know it's in the tombs.
On the other screens, I could see views of the inside of the cathedral, of the train platform, and several other passages and tunnels.
Is there any way we can do a video search for signs of unexpected activity down there? Recent footprints, disturbed graves, that sort of thing?
I doubt it. Not many cameras down there, but I'll take a look.
He began tapping on his keys and the images flickered rapidly on the screens. The tattooed man was putting some things in a pack. They had forgotten me for the moment. The back of my head throbbed with a rising knot. I looked around, and this room reminded me more of a monk's cell than anything else. A cot, a closet, a chemical toilet, a water filtration system. A secret room? Some sort of bolt hole? Was this where Evan recorded his message to me? I could see clothes hanging in the closet and a pair of shoes on the floor. I limped over to have a look inside and no one stopped me. The clothes are sized to fit a small, stout man. I could smell aftershave. Evan's brand. I found a tweed hat on a shelf, and it was one of his. He was here. This was his room. And now he is gone.
What is this place?
Sister Lucy glanced at me.
To cover the work we were doing, our crew posed as an archaeological team. Shayot has always been suspicious of us. A few months back, they began rounding up people involved with our group, on Earth and Mars both. The dig team realized it might be useful to have a hiding place, so they built this secret room.
She saw the hat in my hand, and her face turned sympathetic, sorrowful, even.
Yes, Evan lived out of here for the last week or so, sending us his transmissions from here when he could. But we were on the run ourselves. We didn't get them until it was too late. We couldn't reply.
But if Shayot knows you were digging down here, won't they search this place? Or at least have it watched? I mean, they must certainly have sophisticated tracking equipment. They would have seen me arrive.
They do, and they would have, yes. Toward the end, they cleared out the catacombs, took most of our equipment, and have continued to search it numerous times. But they did not find this room, and eventually concluded that we had all run off, even while Evan was still here. And they continue to believe it is empty, thanks to this talented man.
She indicates the redhead, who doesn't look up from the screens, but flashes the two-fingered victory sign toward me as he works.
Easy, really. I have replaced the normal feed of the cameras with a loop that shows the whole place is empty, while I'm able to monitor the real images here. I even gave them proper time codes, so they're none the wiser. As far as they know, no one is here.
The tattooed man looked up from the backpack to Sister Lucy and nods.
We're set. You coming?
She nodded, and shrugged into a gray wool jacket, which hung loosely on her tight frame. The crucifix around her neck glimmered as she pulled her hair back out of her eyes to slip an elastic around her ponytail. The redhead sauntered over to me and offered me my tablet back, and I took it. Sister Lucy led me to the door.
"Very well, Christopher. We will escort you back to the station, and then we will be on our way. If you believe in what we do here, and if you are a religious man, pray for us. How can I know if I believe in what you do when I don't even know what it is you're doing? How indeed? But you already know if you believe or do not."
And she was right. Despite the secrecy and the danger and the absence of answers, I trusted Evan. And so, I believed them. Hesitantly, begrudgingly, but I believed. The tattooed man unlocked the door.
"Let's go."
"No."
I took a step back and looked at the three of them. They, in turn, all looked at me in mild surprise.
"I want to go with you. Evan gave this task to me. He gave up his life for it."
Tension rose in my chest. My frustration was leading to anger, and I haven't felt angry in years.
"You don't understand what I've been through. You want to send me home. What's home? I don't even know anymore. I can't go back. How can I go back to my apartment and the dirty streets and all the clustered faces of the people? People who are bored or terrified or angry and all hopeless. I can't pretend none of this happened. I can't pretend Evan died of a heart attack. Pretend that his life was as meaningless as his death. And if I go home now, then my death will be just as meaningless. This is my task. He gave it to me. Take me with you."
The two men exchanged glances. The redhead rolled his eyes a little. Sister Lucy, however, moved closer to me. Her expression was challenging me, daring me.
"This is not your fight, Christopher. You did not ask for this. Go home. You told me you were going to give me the freedom to choose my own end. There's nothing for me back on Earth. I choose this. I choose to see this task to the end, to finish whatever it is Evan started. You do not even know what it is. I know enough that Evan gave his life for it. What can I say about mine? 2 months ago, it almost ended, anonymously and pathetically. Before then, I had somehow become a secondary character in my own life, living by inertia. For years, I've chosen to do nothing, and it's led me to a life of nothing. And I didn't even realize I'd done it. I never knew I had a choice."
Sister Lucy said nothing for several moments, watching my face. Then she took my hands in hers, squeezing them softly.
"You always had a choice, and you still do. All right, come with us."
"Oh, God, always picking up bloody strays."
The tattooed man looked troubled and stepped closer to Lucy.
"I don't think this is wise."
She patted the big man's arm reassuringly.
"Evan gave Christopher this task. We should not have less faith than he did.
You know I welcome new members any time we can get them. But now, here, Evan acted out of desperation, not strategy. No interview, no vetting process. We do not need any more liabilities with us."
"I won't be a liability."
He looked at me right in the eye, unblinking.
"That may not be something you have any control over."
Lucy held up a hand.
"I understand your concerns, but trust my instincts, please. I think this was supposed to happen. Christopher, this is Matthew, on whom I rely for matters of security and strength. And this is Oliver, whose talents you have already seen. And I am
Sister Lucy."
She paused raising her eyebrows at me.
Sorry, I've seen your lecture. About Titan? The one about no life? Did you?
She gives me an odd smile, as if she isn't all that surprised, after all. Matthew picked up the backpack and slung it over one of his shoulders.
We'd better get going. We can't afford to wait.
Oliver abruptly sat up, blinking at a screen.
Oh, no.
He started tapping at his keys in alarm, screens flickering to different views of the train station and the cathedral.
What is it?
A security detail just got off the train. There's, like, a dozen men, sheriff's deputies, some people in unmarked combat gear. They're heading for the cathedral.
Figures ran across the screens, armed men, hurrying off a train and moving through the tunnel.
They found us.
Matthew moved for the metal door and took a pistol out from under his long coat.
No way. The feeds have been working since we set them. I've swept the place for transmitters. I've got a sensor at the station. I tell you, we're invisible here.
I believe you, but they did find us. We're going to get out of here, but I need you to discover how they did it and quickly so they cannot follow us.
Oliver checked a few more screens, scanned a few computer readouts.
There's nothing. Nothing's changed.
Matthew looked at me, his expression stony.
Here's a change.
Now, the sweeper didn't find any bugs or transmitters on him. And you searched him, right? So, give me your tablet.
I fumbled it out of my jacket and handed it over. Oliver plugged it back into the computer array and hit some more keys.
Oh, Christ.
Matthew stood by the door, one hand on the handle, the other still holding the pistol. He watched me relentlessly. Lucy grabbed her knapsack and moved toward the door.
Oliver?
There it is.
He points to my tablet.
A script using the transmitter in his tablet on a non-standard frequency. The bloody thing is broadcast at its location every 5 minutes.
My heart sank as all three of them stared at me. I shook my head, spread my hands.
I swear, I didn't know.
Matthew moved, fast and powerful, spinning me around and jamming his pistol into my back. On the screens, the armed men were sweeping through the cathedral, searching the pews, moving past the altar. Matthew's voice was flat and final sounding.
Lucy, we must go.
She hesitated for only a second, looking into my face, searching desperately, before turning to Oliver.
Can you back up everything on that tablet, including the tracking script, in such a way that we can analyze it later, but it will not work?
What?
Oliver was starting to cram some electronic gear into a satchel.
Yeah, okay.
He tapped a couple of keys, fished a key ring full of data slivers from his pocket, selecting one, and tapped it on my tablet.
There, done. It's copied and isolated.
Good. Give me the tablet.
When he handed it over, she dropped it on the floor and smashed it under her booted foot.
We will not be able to come back here. Disable the security cameras. Erase everything here.
Already on it.
With one last push of a button, the screens winked out. Matthew's gun is jammed hard into my back.
You have to believe me. I didn't know it was there.
Lucy looked at me, her jaw set, face grim. Debating. Torn. She flicks her gaze over my shoulder to Matthew. Matthew's voice turns urgent.
Lucy.
All right. All right, we are going. All of us.
I could almost feel Matthew grit his teeth.
Lucy, no.
All of us.
The tattooed man's hand clamped down on my shoulder. Lucy worked the latch and swung the door open, then ducked out into a rough-hewn, unmarked tunnel. Matthew shoved me after her, following close behind, the pistol always in my back. Oliver came out last, closing the door, designed to look like a metal air duct. Lizzie took a flashlight from her satchel and clicked it on, pointing it this way, then that.
How far to the catacombs?
You're not serious. We've got to get out of here. They're coming.
Not without the key.
The larger tombs are down this slope, maybe 2 or 3 minutes. Down, then right, then double back under the cathedral.
Lucy set off in that direction immediately, through the rough-hewn umber rock leading down under the planet. Oliver followed, still stuffing cables into his hastily packed bag. Matthew pushed me along, his grip painful.
Remember what I said about liabilities?
An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.